Hi friends, welcome to the podcast. It's Lou. Thanks for joining me today. My guest today is the amazing friend and friending coach, Noelle Rhodes. She's the host of the Friending Show podcast. She brings so much rich life experience to the table. She tells it like it is, and she really addresses and leads people in female adult friendships, which, I mean, we all know that there's nothing like it. It can be beautiful and life-giving, but it also can be awkward and toxic and weird and make you feel like you're like in eighth grade again. And I think the older I get, the more I know that I need leadership in this. I don't want to just assume that things are good to go and that I can't improve in these areas. My friendships mean more to me than I think almost anything, but I regularly fumble and get stuck and get frozen and don't know how to proceed forward. And so we just really scratched the surface in this conversation. It's so nuanced. We could like throw ourselves a million different ways, but we really dove in. I love the direction this podcast went in this conversation. So you guys, please give me your feedback. Go immediately follow Noelle Rhodes and the Friending Show podcast on Instagram and subscribe to her, because her wisdom has really led me through a lot and she's just become an important voice in my life. So enjoy this conversation with Noelle.
I am a Jersey girl. I was born and bred in New Jersey, and I'm very proud of being from New Jersey because it's such a weird little fun state. But I haven't lived here my whole life. There were a couple years I lived in a country called Northern Ireland, not to be confused with Ireland, but next door neighbors. Yeah. And I was missionary there for 6 years. So really kind of my friendship, my friending, all that stuff, my friendshipping research began because of that. I'd grown up in New Jersey most of my life, did a lot of ministry there. Then I was a missionary to Northern Ireland, made some new friends, which wasn't easy, but I made some really good friends. And then I came back to Jersey thinking, well, it shouldn't be that hard because I've grown up here and I know some people, so I'll just pick up where I left off. And that is not what happened at all. I came back and a lot of my friends had physically moved out of the state or have just moved on because it wasn't their job to wait for me to come back home. And they made new friends and did new stuff. And I had to kind of start from the beginning. So that really was sort of the beginning of my story. But, you know, other than studying female friendship, I am a pastor of a small church here in New Jersey, and I am a mom of two fabulous, wild, and very loud children who are both in middle school. So my life is very colorful all the time. Lots of feels we have here. So that's kind of what I do, and that's sort of what I'm about.
Oh, I'm so thrilled to have you here. Your voice has been an important one for me the last few months. I think you know how people sort of find each other at just the right time. I think I stumbled upon your podcast a while ago, but during my time in the NICU, you were doing like a Christmas devotional. And if anything like that, that was short, I was still really sick then, but I would like hang on to any words of life. And also just your wisdom on the real talk surrounding friendship, I mean, is super needed. I really appreciated it. So that's what I kind of wanted to have you here to dive into more. You have a podcast that's called The Friending Show, and it's really about every facet and nuance of female friendship. No?
Yep. That's exactly. Yeah. It's just, I'm not cute about it. I'm pretty blunt because that's just my style. So yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I love that. So, I mean, you talked about coming back from being overseas, and can you talk about what made friendship the right thing to be
what you talk about and what you really pastor a lot of people in.
Well, I just, you know, I remember coming back home from being on the mission field for 6 years. And again, like I mentioned earlier, thinking I was going to come back to, like, you know, welcome home parade. And it wasn't that way. And I remember specifically there was a moment where I was planning on reconnecting with an old friend, and we had plans to go get coffee. And right before I left to go meet her at wherever, I think it was a diner or something like that, she texted me about like a half hour beforehand and had to cancel. And she had a legitimate reason why she needed to cancel. But because I was finding it so difficult to connect with people, and I was in my mid-30s at this time, mm-hmm. I got that text message and it just broke my lonely little heart. I just, it was like, it was just too much. And I remember like crying, ugly crying. And my husband could hear me. It was like one of those audible, like, you know, weeping, you know, of my lonely soul. And he ran up the stairs and he was like, "Is everything okay? Who died?" And I just said to him, "I have no friends." And I remember he looked at me and he said, "That's not true. I'm your friend." And I said, "No, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yes, we're friends, but I need female friends." And I remember, like, he must have just knew I needed alone time at that moment. So he kind of backed out of the room. And I remember kind of crawling under my duvet and whipping out my phone and doing the most spiritual thing I could do at the moment. And I Googled, "How do you make friends in your mid-30s and that really began my research. And what I found was that I wasn't the only one struggling. I wasn't the only one suddenly finding myself in a lonely season.
Yeah.
And it was comforting, but at the same time it was like, oh, we have a problem with this as a society. Like, this is something that people aren't talking about. Women aren't talking about this, and they're assuming that everybody else has figured it out and they're the only one. So from that, I really felt like, you know, I had something to say. And I remember actually a few months afterwards, I had the opportunity of doing a research trip with my friend who wrote a book. My friend Vesper Stamper wrote like a YA novel. And so we were in Europe traveling around visiting different concentration camps because her book was based was sort of takes place after the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. And so we were like, just wanting to talk about anything else besides the Holocaust when we were traveling country to country. So she was like, "Well, you're doing this like friendship research, like tell me what you're learning." And so I was telling her about it and she said, "You should start a podcast." And that was sort of like the beginning of friending. I was kind of like, all right, I'll start it. And so I started it with four other women. And then we did it for a couple years. And as you know, podcasting is freaking hard. And when life hits, you usually have to put a pause button on it. Like, you know, if it's not your full-time job, you're going to have to take a break. And life hit me personally, and I had to take a break. And then I relaunched it last February 2020, mm-hmm. about 3 weeks before COVID-19 became our reality. So really what we're working on now, what you're listening to now, is sort of Friending 2.0. Mm-hmm. But I love it. I really enjoy talking about this topic. I think it's important.
Okay. So what is like maybe one of the main staple themes that you've learned for your own personal self in connecting with other people?
That's a really good question. I think that the main thing I've learned is a lot of my personal friendship issues are actually just my issues. Hmm. And it's my stuff, my insecurities, my perspective that's broken usually, that I'm bringing in to the relationship and using as a filter to interpret what's going on. And a lot of times I have to stop and go, oh, am I actually really truly being rejected, or is that just how I feel, or that's what I, you know, that's what I'm dealing with on a deeper level, and what can I do about that? Because 9 times out of 10, as an adult, it's not the other person's stuff. It's my own stuff.
Right. Yeah. Do you think the culture is sort of lied to us about how breezy and easy it can be. I mean, yeah, we'll stop there. Then I have a second question.
100%. It's been a big lie. I think too, and I talk about this a lot in friending, is a lot of us grew up, right, watching television, TV yeah. shows like Friends, Felicity, Dawson's Creek, what else? Gilmore Girls, Sex and the City. These are all like friendship fantasy TV shows where you think as a kid, oh, I'm going to grow up and then I'm going to live across the hall living in New York City from my best friends. And we're going to do everything together, and every phase of life, we're going to move together and we're going to be in each other's lives, working at coffee shops, and everything is going to be just smooth. And then you grow up a little bit and you're like, oh, it's not really like that. And maybe I'm doing it wrong because it doesn't look like what it looked like on television. It's just not that easy. It's not as easy as it looks on TV. And there's lots of reasons for that. Obviously, anyone who's writing a television show is focusing on characters and plot lines. It's television. It's not real. But as a kid, you're growing up and you're trying to get some clues as to what adulthood is going to look like, right? And I think the last thing we think TV got wrong was friendship, and it has gotten it wrong. And there's a lot of television friendships that are actually not healthy, but they're hailed as being friendship goals. And I just want to like take out a big billboard and say no. Like, the friendship between Lorelai Gilmore and Suki on Gilmore Girls is actually a picture of codependency, and it's not healthy at all. And yet we're going, oh, I want a Suki in my life. And it's like, actually you don't. You want a friendship where it's give and take. You're both feeding in and really being there for one another. So yes, I do think that society and culture have really not only given us like friendship fantasies, but also have taught us well that friendship is not a necessity, it's a luxury. Because culture and society like to keep us really busy, and our busyness makes us feel important. And so you got to do everything else. And if you could squeeze in some friendship time, well, great. Awesome. Good for you. That's your luxury. But actually, friendship is quite a necessity to just life. And, you know, walking out your calling, or just simply surviving your day, you need your friends. So I think there's a lot at play there.
There's so much at play. It's such a deep well. I don't even know which way to throw myself right now in this conversation. But I think I've been doing a lot of thinking about this and a lot of talking about this. Like, we just walked out of really hard season, are walking out of hard season. And it's very clarifying, like, what connection is for, and these, you know, people around us literally holding us up. But I've been thinking about connection and friendship, and just all of us leaving 2020 behind us, being like really knowing for sure that we do need connection, but it was feeling maybe clunky getting back in the swing of things. So there is nothing like female friendship. It can be like the most beautiful, powerful, empowering thing, but there's also nothing like female friendship. Like, it can be the most poisonous, toxic, insecure thing. And sometimes it feels like it's both, and I'm too old to be experiencing it. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. I think you're right. And I mean, I know for me, I'm not a spring chicken by any means. And sometimes I go, I'm too old for this.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to play these games. Mm-hmm. And to some degree, I think I am too old for this. But also, the tricky thing about female friendship is that women go through about 600 million seasons of life changes. I don't know if you've noticed that, but it's like our lives change so much. Whether you have kids or not, I think if you have kids, you go through a little bit more. but it's just like your life, your body, your first of all, your body goes through a lot of changes. So start with there. And then your life changes and the expectations of who you are as a woman in this society changes. And what I have found to be true in my own life, but also in other women's lives, is that with every season of life change, you're figuring out who your people are. Like, who are your friends right now? Like, who are the people that you're depending on right now? And that's exhausting. I think we need to say that. Like, it's exhausting because the thing about it is some people have best friends who are in this with them every step of the way. Every valley, every mountain, they're there for you. And that's amazing. Most of us don't have that. We have people we're close to in different seasons of our life. Mm-hmm. And so we find ourselves refiguring it out, and it's exhausting and it's lonely. And it's like, come on, I'm, you know, in my 40s, and why don't I know who are the people that are my people? Why do I have to start again? So I wanted to acknowledge that as being just a general pain in the butt.
Yeah.
Female friendship. It's not fun. And I think it has a lot to do with season of life change. How do we remedy that? I think we need to just acknowledge it exists, because we don't. We don't. Yeah. We just act like nothing, like there are no big life changes for women. No, there's like so many. And I think we have to give women the permission to realize that their circles can change, and it doesn't mean there's something wrong with their friendships or them. It's just they're in a new season, which is going to require different types of friendships. And I think if we normalize that, it would be a little bit easier, and we would not feel like we have to grieve and mourn, but that we kind of can just graduate into new friendships with much more ease. Because if you are a person, and this is me, I'm a person of faith, so I believe in eternity. I'm like, okay, every single friend I ever made, I hope and pray I have all eternity to spend with them. Mm-hmm. I can't be close to every single friend I ever made every moment of my earthly life, mm-hmm. but in eternity, I'm going to have all eternity to spend time with my best friend that I made in eighth grade. And even though we don't talk every day now, like I know, like Jess and I are going to be singing Broadway musicals in heaven, and we've all eternity to do that, you know? So for me, I think normalizing that is helpful, mm-hmm. because it's not like the friendship is over. It's just the intensity level is dialed back because we're not in each other's lives like we used to. And the friends I need right now are just different.
Sure.
I hope I answered your question.
You did. So I'm wondering, how do you fight for a friendship that you feel like is drifting a little bit? And then how do you know when, like, they're in a different season of life, it's good to like let this go? And then, I mean, there's people I can think of right now that I feel like there's just a drifting.
Yeah.
And I don't know, should I fight? Should I like work this out? Or should I just kind of acknowledge that this is an ebb and flow?
That's a question I get a lot.
I'm sure.
It's super nuanced, but I do think there are a few things you can ask. Hmm. The first thing is, what has changed? Like, what has changed in the friendship? Is that like a very obvious thing? For instance, have they moved away? Because if people have physically moved away, the expectation of the intensity level probably will go down a bit, because you're not like hanging out at each other's houses anymore, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, you need to let go a little bit of that. But maybe there's something else going on. So it may not be like what has changed, but what is there a conflict you're not aware of that you might need to address? Mm-hmm. So that's the next thing. None of these questions are easy, by the way. They're awkward and very vulnerable, and nobody wants to do that. But if you want to fight for it, you got to ask these questions. So what has changed? What is there a conflict that's gone down that maybe you need to kind of like revisit or ask about? And then, you know, a lot of it has to do with just, for me, observing the person's response. Sometimes people pull away, and it's not because of us. It's because they're going through something.
Yeah.
And so I think that you can just be like, hey, I've noticed there's some distance. Did I do something? You know, hey, I noticed there's some distance. Are you okay? Mm-hmm. And then, hey, is the distance here? How can I be a better friend to you? Mm-hmm. And see what the response is to those questions. And if there's a real kind of like holding out their arms, like kind of keeping you away, there's only so many times you can keep offering yourself. And then you just, I think the best thing to do is to be like, I feel like there's distance here. I want to continue this friendship, but I certainly don't want to force something that's not reciprocal. So I'm letting you know I am here for when you're ready. And then just leave the door open, because that person could be going through something. They just don't know how to bring other people in, or, you know, you, for whatever reason, your friendship makes it difficult for them to process. And I can give you an example of what I mean.
Yeah.
But, for instance, you know, perhaps your friend is going through something in their marriage.
Yeah.
And it can be very difficult. This is where I've seen this happen a lot. It can be very difficult for particularly women to stay close to their close friends when they're trying to work on their marriage after an affair or after some major betrayal. They need a little bit of space. And it's hard for us on the other side, because like, hey, I'm here to support you. What do you need? Like, I'm here. I'm like, talk to me. But they almost need a little bit of like space to do a lot of processing. And then eventually they come back. Mm. So that's something I've noticed, or other things, maybe a death, you know,
yes.
loss of a parent or something like that, or major medical trauma. There might be a little bit of a pulling away, and it's because they're processing and the closeness is, it's too vulnerable for them. So that's something I've observed, but you can only chase somebody for so long, and then you have to kind of let it go, because you need friends.
Yeah.
You need people. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of finding that balancing act of staying available, but also making sure that you're not so isolated because you're focused on this friendship, survival, that you've cut yourself off from potential new friends or getting closer to friends you already have in your life.
That's incredibly helpful. That's really cool. I want to circle back around a little bit to what you were talking about to begin with, that most issues in relationship are kind of your own issues.
Yeah.
And I guess something that I've been trying to do the older I get is like, if a particular feeling raises up in my gut and my throat, I like try and think back, like, when was the first time I started feeling this? This isn't like a new thing. And I can think of just, like patterns that started and lies I believed so long ago. So can you speak to that and like give us maybe some practical tools for every relationship you just kind of see through the lens of your own damage and your own experiences?
I think it rises up in different ways, but you'll feel it. Like, for instance, a classic example is you're scrolling through Instagram and you see that three of your friends got together and they didn't invite you. That's like, I don't care how old you are. It's, you know, it feels like a kick in the stomach.
Yeah. That hurts. Yeah.
It hurts. Right. And even if you know, you couldn't have hung out with them for whatever reason, it's like, man, sometimes I have to go, okay, I feel left out. Is this, do I really believe this is intentional? Like, this is a real, like, they're using Instagram to let me know that I'm out of the friendship circle, you know? Or is this bringing up some stuff? When have I felt left out before? You know, exactly what you said. And kind of like sort of removing as much emotion against them and just kind of dealing with my thing first. Like, is this really me being rejected by these people? And if I do still feel like that's the case, I will reach out and be like, hey, would have been cool to hang out with you guys. But most of the time, it's like, I couldn't have hung out with them. And I should be happy that my friends are hanging out without me. Mm-hmm. A really good example of this too is, I remember this group of young people, who, when I say young people, these are people who didn't have any kids, and they would invite me and my husband over on a Sunday night for like barbecue, and a bunch of them would hang out. We could never go because we lived in a different country and we had no family to help us watch our children. So our kids like went to bed at 8. Yeah. We could never just like leave to go to a barbecue, and we couldn't bring them because our kids were really wild. You know, they weren't the kids that sat in the corner and read. So we always had to say no. Well, guess what happened? We kept saying no, and they stopped inviting us. And I remember being like, they don't invite us anymore. Like, they don't like us. And I was going down this like rabbit trail of making up this narrative that this group of people think they're too cool for us. And finally, my husband's like, Noelle, we've been saying no to them for the last 6 months. They just got the hint that we can't hang out. This is not about them not liking us. It's about the season of life we're in, right?
Right.
And it's also about you wanting to be invited because it makes you feel important, but you can't actually accept the invitation. You're rejecting them first. And I was like, yeah. And so then it just brought up all those feelings. So it's every situation you kind of have to step back, like, how much of this is me?
Did you know we have a Sela newsletter? Amanda and I started it. We are offering just short articles and essays and recipes and beautiful ideas and pictures and workings of other people and even guest writers about twice a month in a short email that will be dropped into your mailbox. I don't want to should you, but I think you should go to the Creative Sela Instagram and follow us, of course, and then go to the link in the bio and you can get signed up right away to be in our newsletter list. And then you'll also be first to know about specials going on and new dates for Sela retreats and Sela dinners and adventures, all the things we're doing. Who couldn't use a little bit of beauty and good news in their email list? So I would love it if you would go sign up for that today.
All right. So my brain is like trailing off into all these other directions, but I think what I want to know is, as we get older, as we acknowledge seasons of life and we mature and different things, how do we get out of our own head and meet our own needs in friendship and relationship and have healthy boundaries, but also just show up and see people and make people feel belonged. And like, talk about that tool, like showing up rather than a consumer, than showing up more as like a giver of people who really, really, really need connection right now.
Well, I think it's important to remember that even Jesus had friends. He just invited people to have friends, to be friends with him. He literally like went up to people and was like, hey, come follow me. Like he just invited people into his life. Yeah. We wait to be invited. So I think that it's important to just, if you're feeling like, man, I need deeper connection, we need to be able to say out loud, like, hey, let's have a real conversation, or come over to my house and let's talk about whatever. Or just a new mom is at the park and you keep on running into her and you keep talking, and finally you just say, hey, like, why don't you bring your kids over to my house and we'll just chat. Just making that first step, we kind of have to get over ourselves a little bit and just do it. But the more you do it, the more confident you become. And I have to say, we're always assuming that people are going to say no, but that's not, people are usually delighted to be invited. And I think if you can, even just extending an invitation, a friendship, is such a gift, and you don't know what that can mean to somebody. So I think just getting out there and saying, hey, let's hang out. Let's be friends. Let's grow our friendship. I think, you know, another really important thing to do is to be really good at speaking well of other women, which we kind of talk about, but we don't actually do. And I find that like women get together and they'll start talking about another woman, it's always like out of concern, you know? And I'm just worried about her because she's just, I think she's so stressed out, and that's why she can't really, you know, keep her house together. And I suspect her marriage is falling apart, or we do everything out of concern. And I think as women, if we could just be like, hey, she's not here to tell us what's really going on, and she's doing an awesome job. You know, like as women, if we could just sort of interject and not allow that to happen, I feel like our relationships would become less shallow, because that's the biggest complaint that people are often bringing to me, is that they have friends, but they only go so deep. And I think a lot of this do with trust. I think a lot of women feel judged by other women, even their friends. And I think we just need to get better at cheerleading each other on, but also kind of coming to each other's defense a little bit, mm-hmm. and not allowing this talk to happen. And when you know that there's a lady in the group that's going to like shut that down, you trust her. You will trust her with more. So why not be that lady that is just not going to let that kind of conversation happen? Mm-hmm. I've been personally challenged to do that more. I tend to not say anything because I don't want to upset people, but mm-hmm. that's sort of what I think.
Yeah. I am really struck with that word invited. I've even said recently just to my husband, even like, well, I'm not really an initiator. I just go where I'm invited. But like, that's not how Jesus was. He invited people into his life. And if I trace it back, sometimes it's because, like, I think my house is super lame, or you know what I mean? And I love that piece of what you're saying. And also being women who, like, come to each other's rescue, that does, it so deepens the trust and the sense of belonging that's really needed. So what do you know? We've touched on a little bit, but what do you know about Jesus through studying friendship that you probably didn't know before?
Well, he was hurt by his friends. He was betrayed by them. Mm-hmm. And in a time where he felt, he described feeling sorrowful to the point of death, they took naps. You know what I mean? They couldn't like keep watch with him during that time. Some of them legitimately betrayed him. Some of them just abandoned him. I mean, he really experienced friendship issues. The other thing too, I want to just go back to what Jesus did as well, was he ate with sinners. And I think a lot of us want to eat at the cool table. We want to like eat with the people who have figured it out, the people who have a lot of followers and a book deal, or I don't know, the PTA president, whoever it is that we think is like cool or has arrived. That's the table we want to eat. Those are the friends we want to have. But Jesus ate with sinners. Like, he ate with the people with a bad reputation. You know, and I wouldn't say the disciples were that impressive either. So I think we as women need to kind of listen. The cool table is not real, but we think it is. Even well into our 40s and 50s, we're still sussing out who has the highest social status here. That's who I want to be friends with, because for some reason it gives us value. It makes us think that if we're friends with her and everybody wants to be her and she always gets invited, well then, you know, I'm a person of importance too. Mm-hmm. I must be doing well in life. That's not at all how Jesus rolled. And that's not even who he rolled with. So I think we need to go, all right, who has God put in my life right now? It may not be who we quote unquote think are cool or popular or well-liked. It may be, you know, the quiet mom who always comes to school pickup a little disheveled, you know, look like she hasn't, you know, showered for a couple of days, is just holding herself together, doesn't have the nerve to talk to anybody, is simply trying to like get her kids in the car so she can get them home, so she can get them started on homework. Maybe that's the person that we're supposed to walk over to and say, hey, my name is Noelle and my kid is in this grade. Who are you? You know, maybe that's who we're supposed to reach out to instead of trying to figure out how to get in the in crowd. So Jesus definitely did that. And I mean, gosh, there's so much that I've learned about friendship through him, but you know, he he also took time to explain to his disciples what he was about. Like, he explained to his friends what he was about. He didn't expect them to read his mind. Mm-hmm. He would often tell stories, but he also, like, I'm studying the book of Mark right now, like several times he like predicted his death and resurrection to them. And of course they didn't get it, but you know, even with Jesus like talking to them, they didn't get it. Yet as women, we're like, we want our friends to completely read our minds, completely read like where we're at without ever even communicating it. And I think we just need to say, hey, like, this is my dream. Can I share my dream with you? Hey, this is what's going on in my kid's life and it's stressing me out and I'm losing sleep over it. Can you pray for me? Hey, I'm going through this like spiritual thing where I'm having all these doubts and struggles and I don't even know what I believe. And I just need someone to know that, you know, instead of kind of like getting quiet, not responding to text messages, you know, quietly ignoring people on Facebook and Instagram and putting them on mute and hoping that people will get a clue.
Yeah.
We need to kind of just like tell it like it is.
Yeah.
If we really want to have that connection and they meet our need and we meet theirs.
That's so beautiful. I've been thinking a lot about my reaction and grief and trauma. And it's the one thing is that I don't know what I want. Like when I'm alone, I want to be around people and I'm mad that, you know, no one's around. And then whenever I'm around people, I can't wait to get home and be alone. Yeah. And I think voicing that and inviting people into that would really help, you know? And as I get older, it's like, yeah, I need to find the words to invite someone to sit in this with me. And maybe then they'll invite me to sit with them in this too.
It's not easy when you're in it.
Mm.
So I want to just say that because I'm here, you know, as a researcher, as someone who's been teaching this, but when I'm in the grief, it's difficult to be like, this is what I need. That's why I think it's important to, on the other end, as a friend, that if our friends seem sad, or we know they've gone, we know that they've gone through something, their baby's been in the NICU, right?
Mm-hmm.
They just lost their parent that they've been caring for the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Instead of being like, oh, if you need anything, just ask, how about saying to them, this is what I can do for you. Is this helpful? Mm-hmm. Because I think when you're in the grief, it's hard to, you know, to think of another list of things to think about. It's just too much. Mm-hmm. So I would just want to encourage anybody who has a friend who's going through something or has gone through something, don't wait for them to tell you if it's obvious, you know, that they've been through some sort of trauma. Think about what you can offer and then say to them, hey, if I pick up your kids on Monday and give you a couple hours to yourself, is that helpful? Because I'd like to do that for you. Mm-hmm. And they may say, no, actually, that's not helpful. Or they may say, yeah, thank you very much, you know, and don't get offended either way. Just give some ideas. I think that's more beneficial than just sort of giving a blanket statement that, oh, I'm here for you if you need anything. Because you know you need a lot, but what do you need? You know,
yeah.
It's too much to ask.
Yep. I think that is the gift of walking a hard road, is you can turn around and spot it on other people's face. And you know how to sit with them a little better in it and not be uncomfortable with it. Is there anything in particular you're working on right now that is like really close to your heart that you'd want to talk about before we wrap up?
Well, I think for me, the thing that I've been sort of working on, and I touched on this a little bit earlier, is, you know, our friendship issues are usually our own issues. And for years I've had like struggled with body image stuff for years. And I never told anybody. People might have suspected, but I was never like, I don't like myself. Mm-hmm. But the last couple of years is something I've really been dealing with on a professional level with a counselor and on a health level, you know, trying to really take care of my body. And one of the things that has helped me are my friends checking in and walking with me in this. and it's been really hard to let them in on this. Is the probably the most personal, vulnerable thing, and I've gone through some stuff, but this has been the most personal, vulnerable thing. And you know, allowing my friends to speak the truth to me, because I'm somebody who doesn't really want to admit that I don't necessarily like myself all the time. I don't want to admit that. And so I'll kind of be like sort of self-deprecating humor. That's kind of how I deal with it. But there are some stuff there. So recently I came up with just some affirmations, some scriptural affirmations I've been sort of speaking over myself in terms of my body image. And my friends have really been encouraging me to keep sort of saying these scriptures over myself. And so recently I just kind of created like really simple like phone wallpapers that I can keep on my phone. And now I'm going to start sharing them with other people, because yeah, I felt like that has really helped me renew my mind so that, you know, I renew my mind so that I can have better actions towards my body, to be honest with you. And it's interesting because I never thought that my body image was affecting my friendships, but 100% it was.
Oh man.
Because I didn't expect to talk about this on this interview, but who knows? Maybe this is for somebody.
You're still here for it. It's for me.
It's for you. From very, very young age, I believed that I was not the pretty girl. I was the funny girl. Someone told me that. My seventh grade crush told me that. And I believed him, because you do. You believe your seventh grade crush when you're in seventh grade. Yeah. But what that taught me was that if I want to belong, if I want to be accepted, I need to entertain people. I need to keep them entertained. And but what I look like is I'm not attractive. So this is why I have to do this. And so, it created all these layers of confusion. But what I noticed in my friendships was I wasn't letting down my guard because I was entertaining. And there'd be moments where I'd be like, oh, wow, I feel like the ugliest person in the room. And I'd almost like hype up my personality and essentially become sort of fake performer almost. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of like making my friendships not good. And I think my friends were very patient with me, like my close friends, but realizing that I do this a lot and then like dealing with it and inviting them into this like horribly awkward, vulnerable thing that I'm trying to deal with has brought us closer, but it's definitely been very, like for me, I feel exposed. So I need like these scripture affirmations to help me get my head right. Because when I believe this, when I believe what King of Solomon wrote in Song of Songs 4:7, you are altogether lovely. There is no flaw in you. When I believe that about the way I look and about who I am, then I'm really truly free to be myself and my friendships. And I'm not their jester. I'm not there to keep the laughs going. I'm not there to try to think of the next fun thing. Mm-hmm. Because I was doing that subconsciously, fearing that I won't be of use to my friends if I don't, because I'm not cool enough or pretty enough in my head, even at my age, to stay in the group. So
wow,
that is what I'm working on, is trying to help women just deal with that one little piece in their life.
Wow.
If it helps them, and sort of letting women into that journey that I'm going through and realizing it's all connected. It's all connected. Absolutely. And
yeah,
when we allow Jesus to step in and deal with that and heal us, then it actually opens up more space for deeper connection with others.
Yeah. Like what you said, renewing your mind in that way would just give, I mean, staying unhealthy in that way for me, and I've walked through some of this too, like you're giving your friends and your marriage and like a test they just can't pass. Like you're asking them to give you something they're really kind of not able to give. So it leaves you kind of feeling short all the time.
Yeah.
I really love what you're saying about that. And I'm really curious to hear more and learn more from you. Are you so surprised as you go in, like when you started this podcast, are you surprised about how many like nuances and topics you never run out of, or did you know? I just feel like as I listen, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's another layer. That's another layer.
Yes, I'm surprised. I'm always thinking the show is going to be over. You know, this is the last season. What else could I say about female friendship? And then it's like, oh no, we got to talk about this. There is so much. And I really believe if you're a woman who follows Jesus, this is an important thing to get right. And not necessarily to get it perfect, but we really need to be working towards growing at learning how to be a better friend, because yeah. Jesus said that the world would know we belong to him by the way we love one another. And I think that we should always be striving, like, how can I love my friends better? How can I show up better for them? And am I going to get it right? No. And I just want to say one more thing. You talked about, you know, not wanting to invite people over because sometimes you think your house is lame. And I think a lot of women feel that way. In fact, I hear that a lot. I just want to share one little thing. My friend Sharon, who lives in Northern Ireland, she was one of those people you could drop in her house anytime, but her house was definitely not the picture of perfection. And I remember when I would show up, and I usually showed up like in tears, because at this time my kids were little and they were just unbelievably, they're so wonderful now, but when they were little, they were just, you could not watch them. They would do something crazy. Mm-hmm. So I'd be at the end of my rope. I would knock on her door and I'm like, Sharon, can I come in for a cup of tea? And she was always like, yes, of course. And she'd come in, she'd welcome you in. She'd bring you straight to her kitchen. You would pass the unfolded laundry. You would pass like her kids in the living room with their homework stuff spread out on the floor. She'd bring you to the kitchen. There would be dishes on her table from breakfast. And she would just take her arm and sweep it all to one side and make space for you. And I remember just being able to sit there. And I never once was like, oh, her house is a hot mess. It was just like anybody's house who has people living in it.
Yeah.
But it didn't stop her from letting me come in because I needed that moment. And she would just make me like some toast and tea, but she just cleared a little spot for me. And I think when it comes to our homes, and even in a sort of, you know, a metaphor of what female friendship looks like, it literally is for one moment, just taking your hand and sweeping your ordinary mess to the side so you can focus on somebody else. And I got through that very difficult season of my life. That was one of the hardest times of my life for a whole other reason, because Sharon invited me in and moved her breakfast dishes to the side so that I can sit and cry at her table. So I just want to encourage anybody who feels like their home is holding them back. It's not. It's not.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm like very moved and filled up and inspired by this conversation. Thank you so much for everything you're doing. I'm rooting for 100 more seasons because I feel like it's just a deep well and I'm learning a lot. So thanks for all that you're doing. Thanks for being generous with your time and coming here. Being with
Thank
me.
You for having me.
You guys, I hope this talk enriches you like it did me. I hope it gives you some things to think about this week. Keep coming back. We have so many amazing conversations with really dear people and friends lined up for this summer. I cannot wait to share them with you. And as always, thank you so much for sharing, liking, subscribing, and reviewing. That is helping so much to just share our talks with more friends. And I've loved every single person I've met along the way, and every communication that I get just means the world to me. So thank you for being my friend.